Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy Coyle. I am your co-host tonight with...
And I'm Bill Hinman, the other co-host.
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. How the heck are you tonight?
I'm here.
I'll go along with that.
The weather is nice outside. It's only 22.
Oh, my gosh. You got a heat wave going there.
It was sunny today. Snow was melting. It was very nice. Tomorrow it's supposed to be 40 and raining.
Oh, boy.
But we'll get back to, you know, 30 and snow by the end of the week. Just because we want a little... It's obvious that winter has turned tail.
Hey, all right.
We are on the upswing. Global warming has reasserted itself.
All right.
Goodness. All right, something's got to be going good here. Hey, you know what today is?
I give up. What's today?
Fat Tuesday.
Oh, it is. Yes, it is.
It is Fat Tuesday. And my family was most disappointed in the fact that I did not take them out for pancakes.
Oh, really? I heard that IHOP has got a free short stack breakfast going on.
Yeah. We usually used to go to our church, an Episcopal church, used to have a pancake dinner on Fat Tuesday.
We changed
churches, and that the church we now belong to does not do that. So
dang.
So I did offer to make pancakes. But Victoria likes Swedish pancakes. Have you ever had Swedish pancakes?
No. What are Swedish pancakes? I mean, how are they different than American pancakes?
They're very thin.
Ah.
Very thin.
Okay.
Have you ever had sliders?
If you're talking about a naval term, yes, I have.
No.
Like not
Castle hamburgers.
Yeah. Naval term is for hamburgers is sliders.
White Castle hamburgers, little bite-sized hamburgers.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In any case, that's what Swedish pancakes are, is they're the sliders of the pancake industry.
Cool.
You need
like little dollar pancakes, little silver dollar pancakes. Yeah.
You need to eat about 20 of them before you even start noticing that So, the problem is, at 3 or 4 at a time, it takes forever. You know, everyone eats the pancakes before you can cook them. So you end up having people standing around with plates going more, and you're gonna,
It's like about 5 of those per spatula flip there, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got it.
I can just take one and just kind of roll it up in like a little finger, and just toss it in, and it's like. Anyway, so it takes an hour and a half to make up a batch.
Oh, boy, yeah.
To satisfy. And tonight, I just didn't have the time to do that tonight. So, I'm sorry, my family. I could not do something.
Hey, well, you know, that's a great teaching opportunity. That's a teachable moment there for CJ.
Nah.
Okay, fine.
She's actually pretty buried in homework at this particular point. She was sick about a week and a half ago, and she is still working and trying to catch up. She was off school for 3 days. And
ouch.
So she's buried as deep as I'm buried, because I got sick after she got sick, and I ended up getting behind in my work. So I had one of my clients call me today and say, we're getting a little behind here.
Yeah. And we'd like that last week, please. Yeah. Okay.
Not a phone call you want to listen to when a client's complaining that you're not getting their work done. And I have nothing good to say about the fact that I'm behind and working hard. But
yep, there you go.
So we have Fat Tuesday. It is a historic time for me. I did attend Mardi Gras in New Orleans a long time ago.
Really?
New Orleans is not just a Fat Tuesday type Mardi Gras. It goes on for days and days and days. The weekend before Fat Tuesday, New Orleans jumps pretty seriously. And I was stationed in Biloxi, Mississippi, and we went the weekend before Fat Tuesday. And I'm speaking of my past.
The days of our youth.
We went out on Friday night. We were about 90 miles away from New Orleans, where we were stationed.
Yeah.
And we parked and found a place and started wandering and going into places. Went in this little place. The thing couldn't have been more than 8 feet wide. I swear. And the bar took up 6 of the 8 feet. It was really, really cool place. And I had this drink that tasted wonderful. And so I had 2, and then I woke up on Sunday.
Yes, indeed. I remember days like those.
I don't remember days like that. That's the problem.
Well,
I went to New Orleans on Friday and woke up on Sunday back in Biloxi, Mississippi, and let me tell you, I can't tell you what happened.
You know, I quit drinking for 7 years because of an experience like that. I was so afraid I was becoming an alcoholic, I said, nope, that's it. I'm done, folks.
let me just suggest to you that the next 30 to 60 days were rather tense in the barracks, the four of us that went. None of us could actually remember what happened.
Oh, gosh.
And all of us assumed when we woke up that it was Saturday.
Oh, boy.
It was very disturbing to find out that it was actually Sunday.
Yes.
And we hadn't lost 12 hours. We'd lost 30.
Yeah. Yep. Not a good experience.
So, I can only suggest to you that, you know, Mardi Gras in New Orleans, lots of fun, apparently.
Apparently.
Someday I'm going to go down there and redo it just to see if I can remember it.
There you go. There you go.
I have a fair amount of interest in the Lenten season as it comes up tomorrow with Ash Wednesday. I tell people all the time that I was born and raised a Roman Catholic.
Okay. Yep.
And I gave up Catholicism for Lent 1 year and liked it so much I just kept going.
And said that was it. Okay. That worked really well, right?
That worked.
Actually,
you know what Lent's supposed to get you into giving up something important in your life, and then it's so good that you just keep it going.
Yeah.
Beyond that Lenten period. That's what I did.
Yep.
It's actually a period of time when I think most people that were raised Roman Catholic actually start paying attention. Lots of people pay attention to Christmas, but I think people actually pay attention to this period of time. I think there's a fair amount of people that, if they don't do much else, they do honor this time.
Yes.
So, I think that that's actually a pretty good thing. I'm a fan of the Lenten season.
Actually, that is kind of an interesting concept, giving something up.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we should consider that. As a conservative group, as a party, maybe we should consider giving something up for Lent from a political point of view.
Well, now that's an interesting concept.
And I was thinking that we should give up, how about if we give up bailouts?
Oh, I like that.
We just give up bailouts for Lent and say, for the next 40 days, we're not going to bail out anybody.
I like that plan.
You like that plan?
Yeah.
We could, this is the time when people eat fish on Friday, for those Catholic people around.
Yes.
Maybe we could give up pork for Lent.
Ooh. Oh. Now, there is a plan. I like that plan.
We give up pork, give up bailouts. What else can we give up that would be really something that would be hard to do, that would really be able to focus us in on our political persuasion? Why don't we give up bipartisanship?
Yes, I like that idea. Bipartisanship is highly overrated, easy to give up.
I'm beginning to, people make the joke all the time, that the Democratic point of view, idea of bipartisanship is Republicans give up and, Democrats get what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking that, I think we should actually do that. I think we should just get rid of this whole idea of bipartisanship and let the Democrats go sink on their own. Like that idea?
They're doing a pretty good job of it so far.
I think so.
Yeah.
We have a caller. I know who it is.
Oh, great.
Caller, sign in, please.
I officially sign in.
Hey, there's Rick. How the heck are you, guy?
Could be better, could be worse.
Well, but being something is better than the alternative.
That is
Rick,
very true.
Rick, we're talking about giving up something for Lent.
Yeah, I was listening to that.
Any suggestions? I know.
I've got one. Let's give up stimulus packages for Lent.
Yeah, that'll work.
Government spending for Lent. 40 days. Can we give up government spending for 40 days?
Hey, I have another one. How about if we give up taxes for 40 days?
No. Can't give up taxes for 40 days.
No. Really?
You know why you can't give up taxes for 40 days?
I give up. How come we can't give up taxes for 40 days?
Because then we'll have a whole lot of people just like me giving up Catholicism and just keep right on going. Once we've given up taxes, who wants to go back to it?
You mean people really don't like to pay taxes? You mean it isn't patriotic to pay taxes?
I think people, once they realize that they are paying taxes, because most people don't think they pay taxes.
I know.
When you think about it, most people just kind of go, well, they collect taxes, but at the end of the year, they give me a check.
Exactly. God, I can't tell you how many times in my banking career I heard that. It just drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Well, what about the taxes they collect on every gallon of gasoline you buy?
Oh, yeah.
People don't realize that one either.
No, they
right.
don't.
The vast majority of taxes are as innocuous as possible so that people just don't realize that it's happening.
Exactly.
And once you give them a really concrete example of them paying taxes,
mm-hmm.
paying taxes ends that day.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things that, we have a mortgage. I don't know if anybody else has a mortgage. We have a mortgage, and we pay our property taxes and property insurance by escrow. And part of our monthly payment, and that money goes to the bank, and they pay our property taxes and property insurance when those things are due. And one of the things that I've noticed working in the bankruptcy industry, working with people that are facing foreclosure, is that the people that don't do that are much more prone to get in trouble with taxes than the people that actually pay their taxes in escrow. So when you have to pay taxes, people have a tendency not to want to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you're a Democrat, you don't pay taxes, so when somebody says you have to pay taxes, they get all kind of like, who, us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, all right, so we have Ash Wednesday tomorrow, the beginning of the Lenten season. Mm-hmm. We're going to give up stimulus payments. We're going to give up bailouts. We're going to give up pork and see how bipartisanship when there's no buy happening.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I read an interesting article today. We've had the $1.2 trillion stimulus package. That's with interest, folks, just for those of you who say, oh, no, it was only 800 and some odd billion. And incidentally, we apparently have committed $900 million, almost $1 billion, to the UN to give to Gaza. Just for those of you who weren't aware of that. And in addition to that, this week, we are in our inestimable Congress going to consider a $541 billion appropriation. And there are 8,000 pork items in that $541 billion appropriation. 60% of them are from Democrats. Unfortunately, 40% of them are from people who ought to know better, and they are called Republicans. Isn't that a shame?
I think we would be better off calling them politicians.
Yeah, they are. They just happen to have an R after their name.
You know, it stymies the imagination that CJ is studying. She's perfect timing. She is studying the part of American history dealing with the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution and that time frame. Why we had to actually go back and work on things because of a very, very weak federal government being practically impotent to do just about anything. And we spent an inordinate amount of time last night, she went to bed quite a bit later than she was supposed to, talking about money, actual currency. And the idea is that the states at one time printed their own money.
Yes, they did.
And how that created all kinds of problems.
Yep.
And how states started passing laws that said you actually had to use their currency in their state.
Mm-hmm.
Because people were starting to say, hey, we don't trust your currency, we want to use something else. And the only way the state could make people use the currency was to make it a law that you had to use their currency. Now, one of the things that she said we were talking about with the idea is that the states could get themselves out of financial trouble by simply printing more money.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while, but she started saying, but wouldn't that be a problem with lots of extra money going around? 14 years old, I'm teaching her well.
Got a sharp kid there.
The reality of the situation, of course, is once the government realizes they can print money, they think all their financial problems are over.
Yes, they do.
Barack Obama thinks that printing money is part of what government does, and they should do more of it.
Yep.
You know, that all comes back to the idea that, what do you mean I'm out of money? I've still got checks in my checkbook.
Yep. It sure does.
But, yeah, Barack Obama goes, what's that building down the street? They print money. Got to keep them working. Stimulus. You know, keep them employed.
Hey, that's some of the jobs he's going to save there.
You know what? Our governor said something over the weekend that just absolutely floored me. Absolutely floored me. He said that because of the stimulus, we'll be able to save state worker jobs. Isn't that great?
Oh, my God. He tell me that you are joking that he did not really say that.
He said that we would be able to save government state employee jobs and therefore the state would not be contributing to the unemployment problem by having to lay off state workers. Thank you, Barack Obama and the stimulus plan. And I'm sitting there like going, are you nuts?
What a doofus.
Oh, my God, stupidity. And, of course, people go, oh, yeah, that's good, that's good, that's good.
Yeah, right.
The state employees are kind of going like, whoosh, whoosh, wow. You know, it, they're talking about, you know, the state government has to do, is going to participate with the rest of the people of Wisconsin with the idea that we're not going to fill positions as they empty. That's how we're going to enjoy this process of not contributing to the burden of unemployment here in the state by maintaining our employment level. I just looked at him and kind of went, okay, here's another person that hasn't got a clue about what the heck is going on. They're talking about building a light rail and a rail system to tie Chicago to Minneapolis. They're going to use the stimulus money to do this.
Oh, boy.
You know, we're going to have trains going between Chicago and Minneapolis. They're going to have, like, 12 people on them.
Is this part of that Harry Reid Magnetolevicon magnetic rail thing that's high speed and is designed to take people from Los Angeles to Las Vegas so they can gamble or something? I mean, is that...
No, I mean, it's the same concept in general.
Yeah, right.
You know, the problem is here, you know, they've been trying to get rail... Amtrak does not go through Madison, Wisconsin.
Do you know that it does not go through... Do you know that it does not go through Oklahoma at all?
Really?
No, that's true. Amtrak does not go through Oklahoma.
Amtrak goes from Chicago to Minneapolis, but it passes Madison, Wisconsin, the state capital, by about 50 miles. You have to go about 50 miles to catch it.
Boy.
And so they've been wanting to get the rail to come into Madison for a long time, but there's no real good reason to do so, and the tracks that are available are just not ready for it. So they have to start from scratch in that area. And nobody wants it. The only people that want it are the politicians and the progressive Dane people that think that if they have a train, people will ride it.
Ah. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. I'm telling you that it's a really, really bad idea. Anyways,
yep.
Stimulus has given people new hope that we're going to be able to do this. So I'm not real thrilled about it, nor are a lot of other people about it. But, hey, let's go on to this particular idea, carrying on this idea. Because I'm getting people, when I'm telling people that the stimulus is the wrong approach, the first response I'm getting is, well, what would you do? And, of course, my answer is nothing. And then they look at me like, but you have to do something.
Oh, God.
I said, well, I'm doing lots of things. I'm, you know, finding new clients. I'm trying to make the ones that I've got happy and trying to build our businesses up. That's what I'm doing to stimulate the economy.
Yep.
I don't think the government has any purpose in stimulating the economy. I'm certain that you would agree with that, yes?
Absolutely. And in fact, every action that government takes tends to depress the economy as opposed to stimulates it, whether that be via tax code, whether that be via regulation. It's a net loss to the economy.
Right. This idea that, you know, the Barack Obama said, well, it's spending, so that's stimulating. And, of course, you know, the problem is you have to rob Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly.
Peter gets really pissed about that at some point.
Yep.
So it's just this this lack of understanding of basic economic theory continues to haunt us in too many, many, many ways.
Absolutely.
And I'm desperately afraid that no matter what we do, we are screwed.
Yes, we are. Economically, we are definitely screwed.
Because the problem is, okay, I'm torn. Here's why I'm torn.
Okay.
The amount of debt this country has right now
mm-hmm.
is insignificant. It is. I'm afraid to say this to people because people just get all kinds of bonkers when they look at the idea that we're $13 trillion in debt and they think that that's not exactly insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the reality of the situation is that it is, in fact, insignificant. Think about it this way. Bill, when you were employed gainfully
mm-hmm.
and you had a mortgage, was your mortgage greater than your annual income?
Absolutely.
Okay. Did that create a problem for you?
Nope.
And why did that not cause a problem for you?
Because the accounting of that is what is the current portion of that long-term debt, not what is the total debt, what is the current portion of it. Current portion is defined as that amount that is due within 1 year. I was quite able to handle the amount that was due within 1 year out of my income generation.
We, as a country, are quite capable of handling what is due in any one given year in our current economic situation.
Yep.
Easily. Almost out of petty cash in some ways. Okay, it's not quite that good.
Yeah, I was processing that and saying, yeah, I don't know about that, but okay.
But the reality of the situation is, we have a $13 trillion, actually it's closer to $16 trillion economy right now. We owe about $13
trillion
as a general amount, but, as a small amount, we're not in bad financial shape. Now, that's not to say that if you start considering all the things that are going to come due, such as Social Security and Medicare and those expenses that pensions have been negating, pushing off to some future date, that we don't have problems in the future. But it is, I was thinking along the lines of the idea they were talking about the population boom book and how, based on the projections of the 70s, countries would be disappearing in starvation by 2001.
Yeah, right.
And, of course, here we are. And, of course, in the 70s and 80s, people were talking about peak oil. They're still talking about peak oil, that we would be out of oil by 2000.
Yeah.
That we would be facing an absolute drought all over the world because fresh water would be gone. And I'm sitting there like going, people, things don't happen like that.
Right.
And this idea that the debt we are carrying is going to weigh us down, I'm not suggesting that we should be ambivalent about the amount of debt that's there. It's bad. We shouldn't be accumulating it. But in the big scheme of things, if we had to, if the United States had to do something, we could afford it. Now, I think what we should do, based on all this, is allow the companies that are too big to fail to fail.
Yes, absolutely.
And we have the wherewithal, we have the resources to be able to pick up the pieces rather than throwing money into the money pits that currently exist trying to keep them afloat when there's just simply no way to do so. All right. Rick, you're in the background, but there's somebody else that has joined us. Caller, sign in, please. Who's there? You've raised your hand. I see you. Hello. Talk.
Hello, this is Butch.
Hey,
go.
Butch.
I didn't know whether to press the button or not.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
I'm not a trained broadcast professional. Okay, let's be honest.
Neither am I, but I'm playing one on radio tonight.
That's right. That's right. How are things with you guys?
I'm having a fun time tonight. I actually got three cases done today. I got three cases done yesterday. I got eight done over the weekend. I'm only 15 behind, but I'm actually getting things done.
Well, that's
cool.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm contributing to the economic stimulus.
Yeah. There you go.
As long as you're spending money. Buy, buy, buy.
Well, I'm not spending the nickel of it.
I'm not spending
the nickel of it, but I'm making my clients spend money
That's what counts.
What's on your mind?
Trying to do what we can to get a party moving in the direction of a party. So
that's right. I forgot all about that. Oh, hang on a second, Butch. Did anybody notice we had an election here? Did you notice? Anybody notice? Hello? Anybody? Anybody?
I noticed.
Hey, did anybody notice we had an election here?
And contrary to your email, I voted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Nine votes. I'm looking for people to step up and participate.
Participate. Well,
we have a new executive committee. I'm on the outs. I now get to say whatever I want to say. Oh, like I've stopped. Only now I have to answer to somebody else.
That's okay, though.
We have two of our new executive committee members here with us tonight. Next week, pay attention, all you people that listen up. Next week, we will have our entire new executive committee to discuss our future. Next week, pay attention, 9 o'clock next Tuesday. In the meantime, we have Rick and Butch, two of our new executive committee people.
What's up, Rick?
Congratulations, you guys, on your successful election.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, you know, just to kind of summarize my thoughts on this whole issue of 2009, you know, congrats on the great first year. I think, you know, about 2 or 3 months ago when I joined the party, there was a couple of reasons why I joined it. Number one, nobody was running for president. That was my first criteria, because parties that have people running for president getting 2% of the vote don't make a lot of sense to me. Number two, the principles of the party were principles that I agreed with, you know, politically and from a policy standpoint. And it seemed like you guys understood the purpose of a party, and it wasn't to be agitators. It was to organize humans around ideas and push an agenda forward. So what I'm hoping we can do this next year is take it sort of to the next step. We're pretty comfortable at this point. I think all the people that have been involved over the last year, including the old and the new executive committee and various and sundry other players, are pretty confident, pretty comfortable with our principles, you know. And I think it was very important for us to make sure that remained the case. You know, we lost a few along the way, who were adamant about certain things that we didn't feel like were a priority, and we stuck to our guns, and they're no longer with us. I'm hoping one day we can pull them back, but it's not going to be by, you know, compromising principles. It's going to be by winning people over. One thing I can say about the Conservative Party, when we cross the aisle, it's to get other people on our side. Okay? That's kind of the point. That's why we cross the aisle. Anyway, the next step, in my opinion, and is to move it past talking policy and stick to those policy principles, but then begin to talk about, okay, how can we grow? How can we grow to the next level? How can we get people involved? How can we get an actual movement started, and eventually a real party? You know, and one of the first steps that I think is key is thinking about how to get off the net. You know, we are essentially for the past year have been a very active and very very vital website, and my position is, and the position of the executive committee in general, is to do what we can to start moving off the internet and start to talk to people and mix it up and get people involved. I think what I'm hoping that we can provide, and I'm pretty confident that we have the right ideas in place to do this, is we can't wait for people to come up with ideas anymore. Okay, I think we're done with that. So what we need to do is we need to come up with the ideas between us and find people to follow through on those ideas. And we need to do it very, very, very soon. And we are. There's, you know, we already have the very rough framework for a three-phase process. And the first phase may take a whole year, but that's what we're going to focus on is phase one. The details are forthcoming. But that's the idea to move it to the next step. We'll start talking about actually creating a party and not just a website. So, and Rick and I actually talked about that a little bit earlier today, so I want to get his take too, because I feel like I'm talking too long. So.
Yeah. You.
This is the longest period of time that I've kept my mouth shut.
I'm not going to comment.
We can play around on the internet forever, and I enjoy it to no end. But to move forward, we've got to put faces to the name, so to speak. We've got to have people out there that you can put your, you know, go up and shake their hand and say, hey, this person is a real person, a viable person, and they're on our side. And I don't think that we're going to accomplish that on the net. I mean, to some degree, maybe, but not to the degree that we're going to be a viable political party.
Let me jump in. I'm going to make a comment about it, because I think you guys are on the right track, the right point of view. We got a phone call this morning. I got a phone call this morning from a nice lady by the name of Regina in New Hampshire. And she said that her daughter had been on the internet and had found the website, and they were extremely excited that we were here and that we were active, and they wanted to know how they could participate. Now, Regina was very adamant that she wanted to be involved right away. She wanted to join up. She wanted to get going in, and I thought that was wonderful. We had a nice conversation. But then she said something that I found to be rather interesting. She doesn't own a computer.
Isn't that amazing? People without computers, that sucks. It's horrible.
But she, because of her daughter, because we had the website there, they found us.
Right,
and now
right.
They're going to be able to. I've sent her on to Jason, who is the executive director in New Hampshire, and said, contact her. She's all gung-ho. They're ready to jump in and get things started. She's not on the web. She's not internet literate. She found us because of the website, but she is much more interested in the physical grassroots, build it from the bottom up type thing that we absolutely positively want. And, of course, that's what you're encouraging with the plan that you're beginning
well,
to lay out.
Well, you're right.
Wonderful idea.
Yeah, and the truth is that there's two things that we have to keep in mind. Number one, we're all different. We have different interests, different strengths, different weaknesses. And, you know, one of two things, and actually both things, have to happen. Number one, we have to be sensitive to and cater to people's interests and their strengths, okay? So, and their abilities. At some point, we also have to encourage people to get out of their comfort zone as well. Because, you know, the way that liberal political activists become liberal political activists is they feel very passionate about something, usually because they're brainwashed, but they feel very passionate about something, and they get out of their comfort zone to go do it, and they become good at it. So two things that we're going to do, and it's going to be very clear once this thing comes out, that we're going to be letting people decide how they want to help the party. And then we're going to be subtly encouraging them to leave that comfort zone. I'll give you an example. You know, how many of the four of us have a blog? I know you do, Tracy. Bill, did you ever have a blog?
Nope, I don't have one.
Rick, have you had a blog?
I've got the one on the South Carolina site.
Okay, so you've done that. Okay, so, and I've had a blog for about 4 years. Actually, Tracy and I's blog started roughly the same time, which I thought was kind of spooky. But, yeah, really. So, okay, so the four people on the call, two of us have had a blog before. Okay, let's say that half of the conservative population is web savvy and can blog or likes to blog or whatever. Well, then those half can blog. You know, at the very least, if somebody is not willing to give us the real name and are not willing to, you know, go talk to humans, you know, and they're not willing to be party types, then if they're already blogging and they're on our side philosophically, then they can blog for the American Conservative Party. They can put a logo on their website. They can explain why they're involved in the party and help promote it. You know, if that's their comfort zone, that's their comfort zone. The other extreme would be the lady you met. I mean, if she doesn't have a computer, odds are she's probably not going to be blogging and emailing and anything on the web. So she's probably going to be talking to people she knows, meaning people that live in her town, in her county, in her area. Very, very grassroots. And there's probably a couple levels in between there. You know, there's people who can work on state issues instead of federal issues. And there's people who can work on very local issues as opposed to either. But we need to have a vision and a plan and a course of action, and we need to give our members and potential members choices in which they can start to help us. And if they want to leave their comfort zone, they can leave their comfort zone. But in order to build a party, we need to use the strengths and the abilities of our members and our constituents. So that's a perfect example, Tracy.
It's always been a very clear situation that no matter how much time, energy, and experience the executive committee can bring to the party, we can't make the party. The party has to make itself. It has to be done from the ground up. It has to be built from the individual people that come into it. And I have had my own particular problems with the idea that our web presence actually makes it easy for some people to be lazy. We have talked about in the past this idea that, you know, the reason Republicans and conservatives are not as active as the Democrats and the liberals is because we have jobs.
I'm sick of the excuse. Tracy and I have talked about this before. I'm sick of the excuse. I'm fed up with it. Absolutely fed up with it.
Yeah, I am so tired. And the part of the problem is the website gives a certain comfort to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody can come onto the website and they do a little bit of commenting, you know, they can say, well, you know, I've participated today. I've been part of the conservative movement today because I went to the website for 15 seconds or
right.
30 seconds
yeah.
or 2 minutes. You know, get off your butt and talk to somebody. You know, talk to people. Do something that's constructive for 5 minutes. Not sitting at a computer screen by yourself. Talk to people for 5 minutes.
Go out and talk to your local supervisor for 5 minutes. Not online, not anything, at
not
least on the telephone, if not eyeball to eyeball. Talk to them.
Show up, participate, get
yep.
involved. Absolutely.
Yep.
I think
my message is, and this is critical, that, you know, if people, however people feel like they're doing something, they should do it. I mean, let's say we have, you know, 250 active members in the party. I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's less, maybe it's more. We have a lot of members of the party and people who register on the site and people who are, you know, come on the radio show and people who, et cetera. But let's say we have 250 members active that are doing something. If all 250 of them are just blogging for 10 minutes a day, I mean, that's a step in the right direction. I mean, honestly, if they were all just in their little comfort zone, you know, if we had, you know, 250 blogs out there spouting out the message, somebody somewhere is going to get up and start talking to a human. I mean, it's just bound to happen. But the truth is, out of the 250, there's probably 100 that are willing to go talk to humans, you know, as long as they're given direction.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something else. It is not beyond the realm of possibility that we should be looking for candidates, okay? And I mean this not even on the statewide level, but like Bill said, you know, talk to your board of supervisors, talk
yep.
to your school board, talk to people you know in the leadership in your county. Join your local taxpayer group. One of the best things I've ever done is join my local taxpayer group. I mean, you learn a lot. You got some very curmudgeon-y old libertarians in there who have lots of opinions, right?
Yeah.
And they, you know, and then you have the loyal Republicans who are always there to, you know, to kind of, you know, keep it sane. But it's a very interesting mix when you get involved with taxpayer groups. So I would encourage everybody to do that, because you learn a lot, you make good contacts, you learn who the movers and shakers are, and you get lessons in conservative activism that we, you know, aren't armed with at this point. But I will say, absolutely required reading, because I caught the beginning when Bill was talking about Rules for Radicals. One of the first things that one of the members in the Virginia Conservative Party, told me was that I needed to read that book.
Yep.
And I remembered Bill talking about it months ago. And that's going to be required reading. But I think that I think what it boils down to, all this to say that there's going to be a plan. There's going to be a course of action. You know, that isn't to say that we're not going to be open to new ideas. That isn't to say that it's not going to change. That it's not going to evolve. But there's going to be a clear. People are going to have clear ways that they can get involved with the party, and they can make it theirs. And we're not going to wait to find candidates. One of our executive committee members is already a town council member, right? I mean, if an existing town council member was attracted to this party, there's a reason for it, and there's no reason why we can't catch other town council members who are tired of, because at that level is typically nonpartisan, depending on the state, depending on the town.
Yep.
So, and remember, in New England, some towns, governments in New England have parliamentary systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why not get 4 or 5% of the vote and get, you know, or 10% of the vote and get a seat on a council somewhere, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, there's no reason not to do that. There's no reason not to look for candidates. Now, here's where we need help. We need help with national. There's going to be 5 national committees. All these details are going to come out, but there's 5 national committees that we're going to be looking for help on, and we're going to look for similar types of help on the state level. You know, we need people who are worried about their state government. You know. And anybody who's not wonkish enough to do that, then it's grassroots. It's just go talk to people about change in this country, and get them involved in the policy in the party. And one of those people is going to be a wonkish or a salesman type, or you know, whatever types of attributes that we feel like we're lacking to build a party. We need to be willing to go find people who have those abilities, have those levels of expertise, and bring them into the fold, and move from there. I mean, big hats off to Charlie Domino, our former currently still Texas director, but also the secretary of the executive committee now. I mean, Charlie's not, Charlie doesn't like getting out and doing the running around talking to people, but he's done it, regardless. I hate to pick on Charlie. I know I'm embarrassing him, but but the point is that, the reason why the party is going in the direction that it is because folks like Charlie have gotten out of their comfort zone. And me personally, I love running around and talking to people. That's really all I know how to do. Ask anybody I know. It's the details that I have more of a trouble with, and so that's why the team works as well as it does, and we need that sort of teamwork. We need that sort of, careful delegation, strategic thinking, and tactical action. And God willing, and the creek don't rise, we're gonna have a very productive year.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being a little bit more active. One of the things that I regretted over the last year is the fact that I've been very actively involved at the national level, and Wisconsin has gotten kind of a short shrift from me because I'm just trying to balance all of the competing interests on my time has created a situation where right here in my backyard, we really need voices being raised against, we are the San Francisco, Madison is the San Francisco of the Midwest. We
sure.
are the nightmare of progressiveness here in the Midwest, and we really need to have people here, standing up and making the comments that need to be made. I mean, Russ Feingold is my senator. I've met Russ. I've seen him out on the street. I don't have the time to go up to him and say, I have, because, it's been convenient under certain circumstances, that, Senator Feingold, I appreciate what you do, but I want you to understand that there are people that disagree with your position.
Right.
You know, you represent me as my senator, and I want you to know that I do not agree with your position. And, you know, you may be hearing from thousands of people that agree, but understand there are us here that disagree. These are things that I want to do, that I'm going to have some more time to be able to do, and it's things that I want to be able to do. I'm going to be happy to work a little bit more grassroots. It's something that, you know, is going to get me out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. It's,
but I like to talk, and I think everybody gets that idea. And,
yeah, I think everybody
you know,
does.
I should use that talking desire, that ability.
You know, I
and
mean,
I
harass.
Can bludgeon people pretty good.
It's all about harassment, you know. It's go out and harass people, you know. And if you don't feel like you might possibly drive someone crazy in a given day, then you really haven't done the grassroots job. Rick, any other thoughts, man? I know you probably had another.
No, not really.
Okay. Rick is the vice chair, and one of the things that Rick is gonna, because we talked earlier today about, you know, who should focus on what, because it is from a strategic, you know, overall standpoint, it's a daunting task. But one of Rick's jobs is going to be to focus on state development, and we're going to have, you know, a very clear path by which states become chapters, you know, state members become chapters and become parties of their own and eventually affiliates. And it's going to be a cool process. I think we'll enjoy it. So
well, there's going to be people helping you, people supporting you. And just to make sure that we understand each other very clearly, there'll be people paying attention and giving you the occasional ribbing, saying, "Hey, don't forget us little peons."
I can deal with ribbing. Hey, look, you know, this is not about peons. This is not about you know, ranks and any of that. You know, nobody here is running for president, remember?
No.
I want you to understand that I firmly believe that the peons run the world.
No, I agree, and I think they should. And the goal of people in authority is to keep from having to run it. You know, we're just supposed to sit back and let other people do it, right? Isn't that the way that works? Yeah, okay, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Comfort zone.
I was hoping I could pull that off, but...
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Hey,
not
Bill...
Not going to happen.
Bill, give us your thoughts before we wrap this thing up, man.
Well, let me tell you that I've been multitasking here, and I'm on a couple of other chats as we're doing this, and I can tell you that the people that I'm chatting with are liking this program. They're tuned in. They're talking about it. Most of them are my friends on Conservative Talk, and they're liking what they're hearing.
Well, good. That's good to know. I'm glad it's getting some positive feedback.
Absolutely.
Well, we've got a deadline ahead of us, and it is the next show. Hopefully between now and then. I'm actually going to CPAC on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Excellent.
So wish me luck there. We were hoping to actually sponsor that event, but this time, in December, we were trying to do it, it just wasn't in the cards yet. So next year we're going to sponsor it. But this year I'm going to go. I have a buddy of mine who's a loyal Republican who may get a ticket for us, so I'm going to go and pass some cards around. So it should be a blast. AmericanConservativeParty.org.
Let everyone know that next week we will have the executive committee on to talk. Bill, thanks for this evening.
Thank you, Tracy.
Rick, Butch, everyone have a good evening. American Conservative Radio, We are off and running. Good night, everyone.
Night.
Night, Tracy.
Man, that timer is just driving me crazy.
What, Steely Dan?
No, the timer on my switchboard kept switching to different times, and I wasn't 100% sure of the time, so I started, I know how long that Steely Dan piece is, and I started it when I thought it was going to be, and just aimed to end when it ended. So, all right, take care. We're done.
Bye. Good night.